Thank you. Good morning and welcome to the Court of Appeals. I'm going to have the marshal call the case and then I'll make a few introductory comments.
The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Riley, Judge Johnson, Judge Jessen, the Honorable Denise D. Riley presiding. The first case this morning is 821-0231. State of Minnesota versus Mandy Marie Brown.
And good morning. I don't know that I've seen either of you argue before, so I'll just go over the basic rules. You each will have 15 minutes with the appellant's attorney having 5 minutes for rebuttal if you choose to use it. Would you please state your names at the beginning of each of your arguments? These arguments are being recorded and will be posted on our Zoom link. When you're not talking, please mute yourself so that you don't get any feedback. And if at any time you freeze or you can't hear, raise your hand so we can stop the clock and make sure that we're hearing everything that you have to say. So with that, is appellant's attorney ready? You need to unmute yourself, please.
Please the court. My name is Brianna Bergstrom, and I'm here today on behalf of the appellant, Ms. Mandy Marie Brown. This appeal is challenging Ms. Brown's Fourth Amendment constitutional rights to be free from unreasonable search and seizure. Now, both the state and Ms. Brown agree, as well as the district court found, that the seizure occurred at the time that Officer McCann activated his emergency lights. Therefore, our discussion today will focus on the events leading up to that point. So for our discussion, first, I'll briefly discuss the factual background, and I want you to pay special attention not only to the testimony and facts that we do have, but the testimony and facts that we don't have. And then second, I'll briefly discuss the Fourth Amendment reasonable, articulable suspicion standard that is required for an officer to perform an investigatory stop. And then third, most importantly, I'll discuss how the facts of this case do not support one, evasive conduct, or two, that criminal activity was afoot. And therefore, the facts don't give rise to reasonable, articulable suspicion, and Officer McCann was not justified in interfering with Ms. Brown's constitutional right to be free from unwarranted governmental intrusion. So the facts. On May 6, 2019, around 2:46 a.m., Ms. Brown pulled out from a parking meter on Washington Avenue in downtown Minneapolis. This is in the North Loop area. Officer McCann, a deputy for Hennepin County, he happened to be patrolling the area at that time, and observed Ms. Brown pull out from this parking meter. Now, Officer McCann testified that there was between 50 to 150 feet between his car and Ms. Brown's car. Indeed, there were other cars in between his car and Ms. Brown's car when she pulled out. He also testified that there was nothing dangerous about the way Ms. Brown pulled out from the parking meter or anything illegal about that. And a couple things that weren't testified to that I think will be important later in our discussion is there was no testimony that Ms. Brown made eye contact with Officer McCann or any other information that she knew he was behind her. In fact, there were cars in between them. And also Officer McCann testified that while it was dark out and there were some street lights, it was possible she had no idea he was back there. And there's also no testimony that Officer McCann observed Ms. Brown leaving an establishment that sold alcohol or otherwise any other information associating Ms. Brown with the sale of alcohol. So after Ms. Brown pulls out onto Washington Avenue, she turns onto Fifth Avenue. So now she's going northbound. And now Officer McCann testified that she had immediately turned right, but I think it's important to not only consider the road routes in downtown Minneapolis, those being close together and oftentimes confusing, especially for people who don't live down there, but also that there's nothing abnormal or atypical about pulling out from a parking meter in downtown and then taking the first right or the first turn that you can at the next street, considering how the roads are set up down there. And then most importantly, again, Officer McCann testified there was nothing illegal about this turn either. She didn't fail to use a blinker. She didn't fail to stop. There was no swerving in the lanes, any testimony like that. Then Ms. Brown turns behind a building that appears to be closed. Officer McCann testified that he went on the next turn and waited to see if Ms. Brown would come back out onto Fifth Avenue. When she didn't come back out, it's not clear how long he sat there and waited, but when she didn't come back out, he drove back there to go do some more investigating to see if she was still back there or what was going on. At this point, he drove behind the building and he testified that he saw a sole white woman sitting in the car. She appeared to be parked in an odd manner, but she was talking on her phone. At that point, he activated his emergency lights and the seizure had occurred. So just to recap, the facts that we have, Ms. Brown pulls out onto Washington Avenue. Ms. Brown turns onto Fifth Avenue. Ms. Brown turns behind a building that appeared to be closed. And then when Officer McCann didn't see her come back out, he goes back there, sees a sole white female in a car that's not parked parallel, who's on her phone. Those facts taken together, those don't support a reasonable, articulable suspicion of criminal activity. Now, do these facts maybe raise some curiosity or make you raise an eyebrow? Possibly, but that's not sufficient to support the standard of a reasonable, articulable suspicion and the seizure of Ms. Brown in this case. Now, let's talk about that Fourth Amendment guarantee in the case.
If I may, counsel. And here I'm focusing on the parking in what was described as an odd manner behind a closed warehouse late at night where all the lights are off. You know, what case law would you point us to reinforce your point that that in and of itself, you know, doesn't amount to reasonable articulable suspicion considering it's the middle of the night, right?
Yeah, that's a good question, Your Honor. And I would point you to first, so the state relies on Applegate versus Commissioner of Public Safety and State versus Uber to suggest that the time of day can also be a factor in this analysis. And I would say that this case is different in those cases because in both of those, there was recent criminal activity that was involved. And that's why that added to the officer's reasonable articulable suspicion in that case. And in this case, we simply don't have that. We're in downtown Minneapolis where the officer testified there's many other apartments, condos, hotels. There's also many other parking lots behind these warehouses. And there's other reasons why someone would be downtown in this example. For one of them, if you are lost in downtown Minneapolis, you may just take the next turn and try to, you know, look at your phone since you can't be on your phone while you're driving to try to find a map, try to get home.
So, if I may, just because of our limited time, and I want to just make sure my questions are answered. You're explaining why the cases the state relies on aren't applicable. I mean, what case would you say, okay, Court of Appeals, according to law in this case with kind of similar facts, it's not enough that she was parked in an odd manner behind this warehouse late at night? Because I must say, just speaking for myself and not for the panel, you know, I mean, I understand your points about, you know, is there enough for evasive conduct? But I'm troubled when you put what there was with this parking behind a closed warehouse.
Sure. So in one of the cases we cited, the DeMars case, that was not, let me just pull this up real quick. DeMars, yeah. So in that case, Your Honor, the defendant was sitting outside, legally parked outside of a residence. He wasn't illegally parked or anything like that. And the officer approached him. He could hear some loud music, and he approached him. And in that case, the Court of Appeals held that that was not sufficient to establish a reasonable articulable suspicion because there was nothing suggestive of criminal activity. Simply because the defendant was sitting outside there with the car on and the lights on, that still wasn't sufficient. Like we find in some other cases where there's been recent burglaries in the area or there's a high crime rate in that area. We simply don't have that here. And I believe in some of the state's briefing, they try to suggest that being in an area with an establishment that sells alcohol should be suggestive of a high crime rate area. And I think that doesn't meet the standard because being in an establishment that sells alcohol is not per se illegal, such as being in a high crime rate area. Anything, you know, associated with crime, burglaries, drugs, that is illegal. There's nothing legal about that. But simply being in an establishment that sells alcohol, there's a lot of legal reasons why someone would be at that place or at a bar or restaurant like that. So I think that's a little different in this context. And Officer McCann, you know, didn't testify that there had been recent DUIs in this area or any other kind of burglary or criminal activity that gave rise to his suspicion. And going to my second point about there not being evasive conduct in this case.
Ms. Bergstrom, I have a question about the, my understanding is that she took a turn, two turns off of Washington to a place that had no outlet, or it was a dead end, there was no through traffic. I mean, I understand that there are other apartments, condos, hotels, as you said, in the area, but in that particular street that she turned onto last, is the officer correct that that's essentially a street that doesn't lead anywhere else besides the back of a closed building?
Your Honor, I actually believe that he testified it was connected to 4th Street on page 8 of the transcript.
4th Avenue?
Yes, that's correct. So while there weren't, a lot of different roadways, this did connect to another roadway. And I think that makes a difference because she may have just been lost and went down this way to get back onto her normal route. And then also, when Officer McCann drove back there and observed her sitting there on her phone, nothing is suggested of criminal activity at that point. So at that point, Officer McCann has maybe a mere whim or curiosity as to what Ms. Brown is doing. And that's sufficient to give rise to a welfare check. Officer McCann certainly didn't testify that he, felt threatened by her or that he believed any other kind of criminal activity was afoot. And so we believe he would have been authorized to approach Ms. Brown to see if she was okay, see if he could help her out, see if she was lost. And at that point, it's likely Ms. Brown would have rolled down her window and talked with him just like she did after he had his lights on. She didn't try to flee or anything like that. She went and talked to him. And at that point, had Officer McCann then observed additional facts that would have given rise to a reasonable, articulable suspicion of criminal activity, then he would have been justified to actually turn that into an investigatory stop and seize Ms. Brown. But at the point that he did activate his lights, there just wasn't enough facts in the record to support a reasonable, articulable suspicion. There was no evasive conduct at that point, deliberate evasive conduct.
Ms. Bergstrom, mm-hmm. I find that your client's behavior is similar to the behavior of the drivers in Tomczyk and Olmshield. How do you distinguish those cases? Because your client parked behind a closed business in the middle of the night. Why isn't that reasonable, articulable suspicion to follow up on Judge Johnson's questions?
Absolutely, Your Honor. I'll start with Olmshead. So in Olmshead, this court found, and I'll quote, the presence of the vehicle in the early morning hours in a commercial area with no residences on the road that does not connect to another roadway provided an objective and particularized basis for the officer's suspicion of criminal activity. Now, there's at least two main critical differences. First, downtown Minneapolis is not a commercial area with no residences on the roadway, and that does not connect to another roadway. In fact, Officer McCann testified that there are multiple apartments, condos, hotels in this area, that there's parking lots behind these buildings.
But she pulled in behind a warehouse. She didn't pull in behind one of the lofts or hotels or other places. She pulled in behind a business, a warehouse.
Your Honor, I think back in that roadway, there would be multiple different places. Did she park outside maybe one that could be affiliated with warehouse? Certainly, but there was other buildings around there in downtown Minneapolis where they kind of all connect. This wasn't just a sole warehouse out in the middle of nowhere. There were certainly many other buildings or areas that she could have been going to or that she was trying to figure out where she was going to. And then the second other thing about Olmshead and Tomczyk is the court specifies that there was recent criminal activity such as burglaries or theft in the area. And we don't have that in this case. And that's important because that helps give rise to the officer's reasonable suspicion that that defendant may be involved in the burglary or may be involved in the recent criminal conduct.
Well, and except here, that it's bar close time in the North Loop and the officer talked about drunk driving.
That's true, Your Honor, but that is not sufficient, such as criminal activity of burglaries or being involved with illegal drugs. As I kind of mentioned earlier, just because the bar closes and that there is potentially drunk driving on the road, that doesn't mean every driver out on the road at that time may be involved in drunk driving. So without some additional evidence that links Ms. Brown to the bar or that links her to potentially drunk driving, we just don't get there. There's that missing link. Now, had Officer McCann, you know, observed Ms. Brown leave the bar or some other evidence that he knew she was affiliated with the bar before the seizure, that may be different. I think that gives him a better reasonable articulable suspicion that she was involved in this drunk driving. But he simply observed her drive out from the parking meter and then take these two turns. And with, like I said, without something additional that links her to this criminal activity of impaired drivers at this time, we just don't meet that standard. So with that, you know, again, the facts that we have raise nothing more than mere whim, caprice, or curiosity. In this situation, Officer McCann, you know, would be justified in performing a welfare check, but his seizure of Ms. Brown was not constitutional in this case. Thank you.
Thank you. You will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. Attorney for respondent.
May it please the court. My name is Amy Tripp Steiner, Assistant Minneapolis City Attorney, appearing on behalf of respondent, State of Minnesota. The state respectfully requests that this court affirm the district court's finding that Deputy McCann had reasonable articulable suspicion to stop appellant. Now, Your Honors asked appellate's counsel about case law, about the location where she was ultimately found. In this case, in this court, in August of this year, in the Marzak versus Commissioner of Public Safety case, found something very similar to what happened here. There, a car had pulled into a closed business, had shut its lights off, parked. It was not normal to see people there in that time of day and parked not in a normal area, away from the normal entrance. And this court found that that was a reasonable articulable suspicion to suspect criminal activity may be afoot. And this court highlighted the fact that law-abiding behavior still may support an inference of a reasonable articulable suspicion that criminal activity may be afoot. And the fact that there hadn't been any calls of criminal activity in that area didn't change this court's analysis. The fact is that activity that might not otherwise be suspicious can become suspicious when it occurs in an area generally vulnerable to criminal activity. And that was also referencing Tomczyk. And so here you have Deputy McCann, who initially sees the appellant at 2:46 in the morning, pull out from a metered parking spot, turn at the first avail, immediately turns onto 4th Street and doesn't continue down 4th Street, which has very limited routes to go, but then turns behind a dark warehouse. And he testified that it appeared to either be vacant or closed with no lights. But what Deputy McCann does is then continues to investigate. He doesn't just go back there. And
if I may, when you described what happened, you left out that something that just struck me as important and perhaps distinguishes some of these evasive conduct cases. And that's that there were several cars in between the squad car and appellant's car. You know, so you when I originally was just like looking at this, I thought, okay, someone's either being followed by a police car and they try and quickly, you know, leave the scene. Isn't that, you know, suggestive of evasive conduct? But here with several cars in between, that strikes me as really something that distinguishes this situation from the cases you're citing.
And Your Honor, to follow up on that, I don't see record evidence that there's anything suggesting that Brown knew that the officer was behind her. It's not like they made eye contact, you know, some of the other case law where there's eye contact or obviously they see each other. Nothing in the record here and several cars between them. So what record evidence do you think supports the evasive driving giving rise to articulable suspicion?
So to answer both of your questions there, it is unclear how many vehicles were between Ms. Brown and the squad car. And you're correct that we don't have evidence that there was that direct eye contact. The record indicated Deputy Brown believed that she may have seen him. And the reason why there's this totality of the circumstances analysis, right? And because that's what our case law requires the district court to look at. And so what the deputy was testifying about is that what he did is when he saw that she had pulled out and then immediately turned, he slowed down and saw her go behind that warehouse. And so for him, he was testified about that curbing, that potential for that evasive conduct. But what he did is actually what this court suggested to do in the Hedgewood case, which was cited by the appellants in their reply brief. In the Hedgewood case, while there wasn't sufficient there, this court suggested that in situations where they see conduct that may be evasive, the quote is that they could wait nearby for a relatively short period of time to see whether the vehicle promptly exited the parking lot or to observe activities of the occupant of the vehicle. Additional observations may then allow them to form reasonable article suspicion. And that's kind of what the deputy did here. He didn't just immediately go back there. So when we're talking about why he had a reasonable article suspicion that this may be evasive, is he went down to see, is it going to confirm or dispel his suspicion that she was trying to evade him to see if she came out another location? Or did she stay back there and then give him a different suspicion that criminal activity may be afoot? And so we have to look at the totality of everything that Deputy McCann was observing at that time of day, at that location, the behavior that he observed, and what he continued to see when he then goes back behind that warehouse and sees her parked askew, that she's not, he testified that he couldn't think of any legitimate business purpose for her to be back there because it was dark, everything was closed, and she wasn't parked as if she was there for anything legitimate. She hadn't pulled into an actual like parking spot or parallel to the building, but was in this, what he called a skew manner. And so you have to look at that totality of the circumstances that based on everything that he saw, that he did have reasonable or articulable suspicion that criminal activity may be afoot and properly stop the appellant. Counsel talked about how Tomczyk is distinguishable, but there in Tomczyk, the court talked about how this was a construction area that was undergoing construction where a burglary, vandalism, or theft might occur. In Tomczyk, they didn't have any reports of burglary or actual known thefts. Same here. Deputy McCann, while he didn't testify that there was any known criminal activity back in that area, the mere fact of how she was parked based on her previous driving conduct all supports that reasonable articulable suspicion standard because we rely upon his training and experience. He testified about his 8 years of experience and knowing that area could have had a higher vulnerability to criminal activity.
If I may, it strikes me the fact that, you know, she stopped and when he observes her at first, she's on her phone. Also just, you know, in this day and age could lead to a lot of very reasonable explanations for that conduct. If she's lost, she needs to call someone. She's obeying the law, which says we shouldn't be on our phones while we're driving. So she needs to call someone back. So she pulls over and does that. Shouldn't we take some of those possibilities into consideration when we're looking at, as you suggest, all of the circumstances?
Well, you're correct that it is the proper thing to do is to pull over if we're going to be using our cell phones. Again, that goes back to those innocent explanations don't negate a reasonable articulable suspicion of criminal activity. The fact that he saw her on her phone, it doesn't have to be the reasonable inference is that she is trying to figure out directions. It could be just as equally likely that she's trying to contact somebody to say, I'm here, let's do the job. And so the fact that he as an officer, as a deputy, needs to investigate to ensure why is this person who had just done these quick turns after immediately pulling out from a parking meter now parked in this askewed manner, why is she back here? Is there vulnerability to this business? Is criminal activity afoot? And all of those behaviors that he saw when we look at that totality is a reasonable inference for this particular case based on the fact pattern. There may be other times, Your Honor, where that, you know, a person is on their phone and maybe it doesn't rise to the level of reasonable articulable suspicion, but it does in this case. And the district court properly found so.
I'm on that issue. I'm unclear on whether the officer saw the cell phone before or after the seizure occurred. Is the record clear on that? Or can you tell me your position on which occurred first?
I would have to double check the report, but I know he indicated that he saw a white female sitting in the vehicle, and it, he may have simultaneously activated his lights at that same time. I would have to double check the record on that one.
But you don't know that the record's clear with regard to Judge Johnson's question.
Your brief at page 5 says Deputy McCann noted that when he approached appellant, she indicated that she was using her phone to access the GPS and so on. And so that makes me wonder whether the when he approach, if that means approach on foot, and if it means that it was only then that he learned that she was on her phone, and whether, I mean, I think he used his overhead lights, right?
He did.
When he parked. And so my understanding is that the seizure occurred probably before he got out of the car.
And the state does not dispute that the seizure occurred at the time that the lights were activated on his squad car. And that's what the district court had found, that the seizure occurred at that time. He had testified that he had radioed out at the time that he had activated his lights. And so he testified on page 9 of the transcript that he just saw the vehicles occupied by a sole white female, and it was parked in an odd manner behind the warehouse. And so he doesn't testify about her being on the cell phone until he had already started walking up to there. So that would weigh in favor of him having a reasonable articulable suspicion that criminal activity may be afoot and negates any innocent of those explanations as to why she was on her phone at that time. Your Honors,
am I correct that you're not relying on the welfare check doctrine, not briefed? I mean, was that explored below in the district court at all? Was there any arguments concerning welfare check at that stage of proceedings?
My understanding is that the state may have argued that at that time it was not a stop. However, we did not brief the welfare check for the Court of Appeals, and the state is not arguing that it was a welfare check. That Deputy McCann had reasonable articulable suspicion that criminal activity may have been afoot at the time that he activated his lights. Your Honors, the record is clear that the district court properly found that Deputy McCann had reasonable articulable suspicion because the district court properly looked at the totality of the circumstances. It properly credited Deputy McCann's training and experience of 8 years of acknowledging that in that particular area at that time of day, there's a higher rate of impaired drivers. It credited the fact that he had knowledge that that area had establishments that sold alcohol. The law does not require that he see her come out of the area, but merely that is part of the totality of what he was analyzing. The appellant may have seen the squad car. District court found that she may have seen the squad car, but then went further on about the fact that there were multiple things that he relied upon, that her driving conduct of going down a road that has very few roads and then turning behind a closed warehouse where there was no lights on was atypical and not normal behavior, that when he went and waited for her, she did not come out that way, which was furthering his suspicions that she may be evading him or that criminal activity was afoot. And then when he drove behind there and saw her parked in an odd manner in a vacant area with no lights on, was consistent that all of that gave him reasonable articulable suspicion. As a result, the state would respectfully request that this court affirm the district court's order. Are there any other questions from the panel? All right.
Judge Johnson, do you have any questions? I see Judge Jessen shaking her head no. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Ms. Bergstrom, any rebuttal?
Briefly, Your Honor. First, I would like to just add that it appears in the transcript that he did observe Ms. Brown on her cell phone before he activated her lights. On page 10, he states, "I observed the female in the car on her phone and then put myself out on the radio that I would be investigating the suspicious behavior." So that further shows that maybe he did wait for Ms. Brown out on the road to further confirm his suspicions. But at that point, he drives back there and he sees a sole white female sitting in her car on her phone. If anything, you know, I would argue that that observation right there should halt any kind of reasonable suspicion that he may have previously had before that. And it certainly halts any sort of evasive conduct. Ms. Brown is not continuing to drive away or flee from Officer McCann. You know, it's very likely she had no idea Officer McCann was even over there. Rather, it appears she was on her phone because she may have been lost, or she may have been waiting for a friend, figuring out where her friends were since they had just left an establishment. Things of that nature that certainly don't give rise to any objective suspicion of criminal activity. And as Your Honor said, in this day and age, you know, there's many reasonable reasons for why she would have been there sitting on her phone. And one of those would be pulling out of the traffic so that she can try to go onto her maps to figure out how to get home, things like that. And another comment that Ms. Stripstener made was that maybe she pulled up to the building and was on her phone to tell her friends, I'm here, let's do the job. And if that is a reasonable suspicion, that would go to the fact if there was, this was an area with high crime rate. So if this was an area where a recent burglary had just happened, or where there's other instances of illegal drug use, that would make sense then that, okay, I see her on her phone, so I think now she's trying to meet up with someone else to do the job. But that simply wasn't the case because we weren't in a high crime rate area, and Officer McCann did not testify to any facts providing for that. And the second part I wanted to say, Your Honor, is you know that there were several...
Ms. Bergstrom, a question I have for you is, are you saying that any of the facts are clearly erroneous? Or are you just saying that the judge drew the wrong legal conclusions from the facts?
The facts that we would say are clearly erroneous were the officer's subjective beliefs. In State versus Shrupp, this court says that the officer's good faith subjective analysis is not sufficient. And that's because the standard that we deal with for the Fourth Amendment issue today is an objective, particularized suspicion of reasonable suspicion of criminal activity. So therefore, the officer's subjective beliefs are not sufficient to get us to that standard. So for example, when the officer believes that Ms. Brown may have seen him, that's not sufficient in this case. We don't have evidence that they actually made direct eye contact. We don't have any other evidence suggesting that Ms. Brown knew Officer McCann was behind him. And I would add to that as well, this isn't a prolonged, this wasn't a prolonged following by Officer McCann. She pulled out, she took two pretty quick turns. So it's very reasonable that she didn't even have time to look behind her or know what cars were 50 to 150 feet behind her. So with that, we would argue that the district court erred in holding that there was a reasonable articulable suspicion to justify Officer McCann's seizure of Ms. Brown. And we'd ask that that ruling be overturned. Thank you.
Thank you very much. The case was well briefed and well argued, and we'll have our decision out within the 90 days.